Blog Talk Radio.
Michael Jones. I'm joined by John Potts. Hey, John.
Hey, how's everyone going tonight?
Doing pretty good. Hope everybody else is doing well outside. Looks like we've got another weekend by us. Good weather.
Yeah. I'm a little bit tired tonight. I was up all night. And actually, I see someone in the chat room that was also up all night. Hey, Joel, how you doing? Of course, one of us is evidently able to sleep like a baby when they're on an investigation. I won't mention which one of us it is, but Joel, I'll be sending you a rattle in the mail. We had a really interesting day at Jordan Springs and a very interesting night.
Wow. Well, I mean, could you tell us who you were with and everything? That's the interesting part that I think is kind of cool.
Okay, well... Shenandoah Shadows team was there, and Joel and Tim and Nicole and Michelle and myself were the team members present. And then we were co-investigating with a group called Adventure Miss, and from their team, Frank, Jonathan, and Vicky were there. And there was a lot going on yesterday because they facilitated a live streaming investigation of Jordan Springs last night that we were part of, as well as that they were shooting a mini documentary for Jordan Springs talking about the history and the paranormal aspects of historic Jordan Springs.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I got to catch part of the broadcast. I came in and I noticed you guys were having Wi-Fi problems. That place is massive, isn't it?
It's 48,000 square feet. And actually... Adventure Miss are very tech-savvy folks, and they went through the building, and they had a device which measured, you know, the intensity of the Wi-Fi locations and stuff like that, and they basically mapped out all the locales. But evidently, BlackBerries and other wireless devices now have the ability to go from different types of Wi-Fi transmitters, and the Wi-Fi system at Jordan Springs, I guess, had been built incrementally, and there were different types of transmitters. But the technology that's used for streaming video, when you start the show, you pick a type of transmitter, that's my understanding, and then you're stuck with it. So we weren't actually able to use all the Wi-Fi areas that we thought were there because we couldn't figure out why we were dropping off in areas that we were getting a strong signal, and then we realized that it was because it was a different type of transmitter.
Ah.
So, anyway.
Well, I noticed that was that the actual manager over Jordan Springs, the guy that they were talking to?
That was Colt Nutter. He's the executive director at Jordan Springs, and you know, he was telling some of the history and explaining, you know, how Jordan Springs is used as a conference center and event center, and that they do weddings and other types of things there.
Right. Well, who was the lady that was with him?
That was Toni Wallace, and she's one of the owners of Jordan Springs.
Oh, okay.
And she was actually, you know, being interviewed about her personal experiences because, you know, the fact that, you know, she's there probably most of the time 7 days a week and 14 hours a day, she sees and experiences quite a few things there.
Right.
So, you know, she shared some of her stories. As well as that last night she was part of the video investigation, and we brought her in at one point when we were doing an EVP session. And in the two-plus years that we've been investigating there, that's probably only the second time that she actually became involved with some aspect of an investigation.
Okay. Now, I noticed when you guys were doing the tour, there was one place that I think the head of Adventure Myths went down to the end of the hall and said he was actually hearing some pecking or something.
Yeah, we were forced because of the Wi-Fi coverage to keep the camera up basically in the central staircase of Jordan Springs. And one of the Adventure Myth team leaders had actually walked down one of the wings, and he was hearing tapping noises and stuff down there. And later in the night, there was actually various activity that occurred, and it appears some of it was, in fact, caught on video, and they're in the process of reviewing that. So, yeah, it was an interesting day for us. We actually got there early in the afternoon on Saturday because we wanted a chance to explore the grounds. Now, we've been investigating at Jordan Springs for since October 2008. We probably have 35-plus investigations there. And at this point, we haven't been in every room in the hotel. And we've only literally scratched the surface of the 238 acres of land that's part of the estate. And just given the history and usage of that area over time, there's a lot of interesting things out on the grounds as well.
Wow.
One of the things, Tim and Nicole were out exploring in this one area where various psychics have identified that there was a Native American burial ground. They came by accident. They came literally almost stumbled across a tombstone. And at first they just thought it was a rock leaning against a tree, and evidently someone had picked it up and set it against the tree because it didn't appear to be at an actual gravesite. And what was unique about this tombstone was it was about half the size of a normal vertical tombstone, and it didn't have any writing on the face of it, but it had initials on the top of it.
Huh.
And I believe the initials were, I'm not positive about the middle initial, but I think it was an R. I think the initials were IRJ. Now, what's interesting is in the history of the site, there was an Isabel Jordan who died of consumption. And but we didn't actually have an age for her, so that's something that we're researching to see if we can narrow it down. Because, you know, in the 1700s and early 1800s, cemeteries frequently, when babies died, they would have basically just a small stone and not any kind of name on it. And then children would frequently be a, scaled down version of a headstone. And then, adults had a much larger one and typically had writing on it and dates and stuff like that. So at this point, this headstone is consistent with a child's stone. Now, the location where we found this, and again, we're pretty sure that it's not the actual gravesite, but it was within, basically if you look down this hill, you could see the Jordan Farms homestead. So at some point, that land was probably all cleared, and it would have made a very lovely place to have a family plot. So somewhere in that vicinity, I would imagine, are other family graves as well. But over the years, that area has been heavily logged. And the fact that it's open to the public and, near where we found this tombstone was, trash and beer bottles and stuff like that. So,
wow.
So anyway, we marked the location of where the stone was, and we actually took the headstone back to the Jordan Springs center, and they're going to be placing that in their museum. And if we can actually locate what we think is the gravesite up on the hill, then we'll put a replica stone up there. But as it stands, we just felt that this piece of history was going to either be damaged or stolen.
Right.
So, but I got to tell you, there was this moment when I'm picking up this tombstone and thinking, boy, I hope I don't piss anyone off here. No, seriously, that thought process went through my head, you know, and so.
Yeah. Wow. I remember when I first got on the video, watching the video, they were talking about all the different rooms. And what I really found fascinating was that ballroom and how they have – there's no light – I mean, we'll get to this in a little bit – but there's absolutely no light coming into that room whatsoever. And then when you go upstairs, the hallway, absolutely, I did not see a window to the outside in that hallway, anywhere on the third floor or any of the floors for that matter, as you know, when you get into the hallway areas. Now, the stairwell actually had windows placed oddly, but, you know, in general, you know, when you see something, you can always have to try to figure out if it was a car passing or somebody outside with the light shining through a window. But in this place, you don't really have to concern yourself with that, do you?
Well, in some parts of the building you do, but in other parts you don't. Like the ballroom that you're talking about in particular, they have taken and they've actually blocked over all the windows with plywood, so there's no light. And the walls and everything are draped in fabric. So there's no external light sources coming into that room. They do a lot of different types of lighting for different events. So they don't want, you know, sunlight or any kind of external light interfering with some of their rather elaborate, I don't want to say light shows, but, you know, light setups that they do.
Right.
Up on the third floor that you were talking about, the wing that you saw, at the very end of the hall is a window, but it faces the Devil's Backbone, which is a geological formation, rock formation that actually is probably, I don't know, at least 100 feet taller than the hotel. And over that side there are no, like, roads or light sources. So it's dark, so you don't get any external light from, you know, traffic or anything for that matter. And then on the opposite hallway, there is, in fact, no windows. So if all the doors were shut in those hallways, it's very, very dark even in the daylight.
Okay, cool. Now, what was one of the first incidences you guys had during the telecast outside of the knocking?
Well, actually... See, at Jordan Springs, it's like stuff goes on there literally all the time, all day long. It's not like time dependent in the sense that, you know, everyone has this idea that, you know, ghosts come out at night and stuff. Because the folks or the spirits there at Jordan Springs are rocking and rolling in broad daylight or night. It doesn't seem to matter. And there's a lot of activity there. Joel and a few other members of the team actually were out exploring a section of the property, and possibly they were working with a psychic, and they came across what the psychic believed was the original location of the 1700s homestead. And the psychic was identifying where there were slave cabins and where there was tobacco barns and various things. But when they were in that area, and I believe we were talking probably like 3 or 4 in the afternoon, they were having a lot of different experiences. Now, I personally wasn't there, so if anyone, Joel's in the chat room, so if anyone wants to ask Joel if something happened to him, maybe he'll type something out. But again, you know, it's broad daylight, and they're having experiences there. And that was pretty much, you know, within the first hour of us, you know, doing stuff there. But as we were, you know, setting up for shooting the Adventure Myths was also shooting a documentary that night, a mini documentary to use for promotions there at Jordan Springs.
Right.
As we're setting up, you know, they're hearing noises that they can't explain. They're going through the building, you know, and identifying locations and you know, they're hearing stuff, but it's all low level, and, you know, it's the kind of thing that's like, well, you know, without anything else, you know, I can't, you know, attribute this to being paranormal in nature. But then as the night rolled on, stuff started happening, and then it got harder and harder to be able to, like, discount something to say that it was something naturally occurring. One of the things that occurred, I think that the people that were watching the streaming video didn't see the event because we had the room covered, like 280 degrees of the room was covered by camera. So as you might suspect, the event occurred in the area where we didn't have a camera. But the response of the people at the table doing the EVP session, I imagine, might have been somewhat amusing. I mean, you could speak to that because you were actually watching the show.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was wild watching their response to it. The that's one thing I noticed is during the EVP session that there was one point where I saw you look over your right shoulder, and evidently a chair had moved. I heard the noise. You know, you could hear the noise in the ambient background, and there was actually something moved. And you said something about it being a chair.
Well, yeah, I mean, literally at that point, we were sensing that there was a little boy, and they were actually trying to communicate with the little boy called Edgar Brown that in the past we've actually gotten EVPs where he's named himself. Frank was conducting an EVP session and asked to give a sign. You know, give us a sign that you're here. And we started hearing noises around us. And then the table directly behind me, the chair, it sounded like it had scooted out from the table. And you heard the noise because it got picked up by the audio on the camera. And so as soon as I heard this noise, I looked over my shoulder. And, of course, I didn't see anything at that point. But shortly after that, we had the experience where the owner of Jordan Springs and Frank saw this ball of energy go across this massive double door, and it was probably about 3.5 feet off the ground, and it slowly kind of, you know, go up and down, you know, it seemed to be like, you know, within like a 6-inch variance. And then this thing just disappeared into the wall. Well, you saw the response of these two, and I happened to be not looking directly in that direction
right at
that point because I was hearing other things, and I was looking in another part of the room. But they strongly reacted to it.
Right.
And then I started questioning them about what they saw. And when I said, well, how big was this? And they both put their hands up and created essentially a ball shape that was about the size of a softball. And they hadn't discussed, you know, nothing had been mentioned in terms of size. And then as they were talking about the light, because they kept saying it was real bright, it was almost like a flashlight. So this thing was the size of a softball, and it was illuminated to the point that it was actually casting light onto the door. So not only was this self-illuminating, it was illuminating at a level that as it passed, it you know, essentially backlit onto the door.
Wow.
And then, you know, we're trying to debunk it. So at one point someone says, oh, look, you know, it might have been off of your watch, you know, because I have a large watch with crystal. So everyone started doing experiments with anything shiny that they had to try and see if we could create something coming off the camera illuminators. And
right, I was giving feedback through the chat room too, telling you guys what was, you know, it wasn't doing it.
Right, and that was real helpful. And then we did things like, you know, took out various size flashlights and tried to flash that onto the wall. And evidently, it looked nothing like it. Now, the thing that was interesting was, and I think that you picked up on it, you know, we all seem to have the trouble of saying orb these days. See, Doug, I said orb just because it's been so misused just conceptually in terms of, you know, a true orb is a self-illuminating ball of energy, okay? And what we typically see and hear about from most things out on the web and stuff is reflective dust that's close to the camera and appears to be large, but, you know, it's nothing more than a speck of dust.
You actually had two witnesses see it with their eyes.
Oh, I know, but, you know, the fact is like, he wanted to say orb, but then he didn't, just because, you know, people get the wrong idea. You know what I mean? You know, it's just, you know, for those investigators that know what they're doing, that's become a bad word because it's so misused, and, you know, it's just, you know, it's unfortunate. But anyway, you know, this clearly was a ball of energy that was self-illuminating, that was the size of a baseball or, you know, a softball. Now, the thing is that's not the first time we've seen that there either. We've seen that a number of times up on the third floor. But this was the first time the owner, and, of course, this was the first time that Frank had seen it, because Frank had only been out at the location once before.
He seemed to be a little excited by it, that's for sure. You know, he wanted to see it again, if I remember his statement correctly. So.
Yeah. Because, you know, it was just, I mean, you saw how excited the owner got. I mean, she was just like, she was beyond herself. So that seemed to be like, that was like the kickoff at a football game, because things really started ramping after this happened. Probably, I don't know, it was, to be honest, I wasn't looking at a watch at the time. You might have a better idea of time because you were watching the show. I'd say within 3 or 4 minutes of that event, everyone at the table is saying, hey, did you hear somebody walking in the hall?
Yeah, it was about it was about that length of time.
So I'm looking up, and, you know, again, there's these massive double doors, and because they're interior doors, there's no, like, weather seals and stuff. So you can, like, see under the door, and you can see where the two doors come together. There's literally probably, you know, an inch gap or something like that. I saw a full-sized figure walk by. Now, the way the light is, it was backlit, and so to me it seemed like a full-sized shadow. But, you know, it had mass to it. It wasn't, like, you know, translucent or anything like that. And the other investigator from Adventure Miss pretty much immediately jumped up, went to the door, opened the door, looked out there, and saw no one, and then stepped back in, and I'm saying, hey, I saw someone walk by. So then he went across the lobby and checked in the chapel area, and there was nobody there. And later we checked with the other investigators and stuff, and they weren't even in the building. So everyone at the table heard someone walking in the hall. I literally saw something walk past the door. And then, again, we went out and checked, and there was nothing there. And just given the location, someone couldn't have walked fast or even ran and not been heard or spotted at that point, given where the location was.
Wow.
And then we got a number of EVPs immediately following that as well. There was a male voice that we caught, again, and that was actually right next to Vicky, who was running the computer that was facilitating this streaming video. And literally, it sounded like someone was, like, right next to her, and you couldn't make it out. It was almost like, I don't know, kind of grumbling kind of thing, but,
I told Vicky in the chat room, there was one point I heard breathing, and it wasn't her breathing. It was real subtle, but you could hear it.
Yep. So anyway, we you know, continued doing EVP work for probably another 10 minutes or so, and then by that point it was, you know, pretty much the end of the streaming investigation, I believe. And then, you know, after that, we ended up breaking into our various teams. Now, one of the interesting things, another interesting thing that happened that night, which was, I don't know, I just found it very amusing. The Adventurous team asked me to come up and join them for an EVP session up in the attic. Now, the attic's known for two spirits in particular, a rather nasty male and a young girl. And I have a number of EVP recordings of this girl that we've collected over the last couple of years. And, we've, like, back history to Venture Miss with a number of these stories, okay? So they're up there, and they're trying to communicate with the little girl. And they're doing an EVP session, and they sense that there's the child's there, so they're asking questions. And then this male spirit comes up, and this child never stays when the male spirit comes up. She leaves, and this male spirit felt somewhat intimidating, so he was challenged, and he ended up leaving. So they decided at this point to check the audio, do a quick check, because they thought possibly, I actually thought I had heard a couple replies to some of the questions. So as we're listening to this audio, trying to see if we've got an EVP, all of a sudden, we hear this little girl's voice, okay? So I immediately think, oh, great, they caught it on the recorder. And then it's like it dawned on everyone that the voice wasn't on the recorder. We were actually hearing a disembodied voice in real time. Now, we were fortunate, though, because we were filming the EVP session, or I should say Adventure Miss was filming the EVP session, and the audio on their camera picked it up. And it also picked up the whole moment of confusion where we thought the little girl's voice was caught on the handheld recorder, and then we all realized that it was actually a real-time disembodied voice.
So that would be exciting to me. That's when it gets good. You can't get any better than just a full-blown audible voice going on. It's one thing to get EVPs, but when you actually hear it with your own ears.
When five trained, experienced investigators, all experience the same thing, and then we end up also getting it on audio, that's just about as good as it gets. So that was just, one of, like, many things that were happening that night. Now, another thing that occurred was that at one point, Adventure Miss, and this is part of their plan for the documentary, they wanted to sleep in certain locations in the building, and they actually, Jonathan and Frank chose the two most active and basically least liked locations in Jordan Springs, just in terms of spirit activity and things that psychics have said, and just generally how when people go to these locations, it makes them very uncomfortable, and they tend to, like, not want to be there, even if they don't know anything about it. Well, in one of the locations, they actually set up a device that basically throws a laser grid type pattern 360 degrees into the room. So essentially when you look at it, there appears to be these dots all over the room, the floor, the walls and stuff. Well, Frank went to sleep in this room where allegedly a male has committed suicide. And he's pretty active there. And we have a number of, like, Class A EVP sentences that we've collected from this room. And so Frank's sleeping in this room. And at one point during the night, and it only happens once during the night, something comes across this grid and breaks the pattern. Yet there doesn't appear to be anything in front of the camera, but the lights gradually, blink out and then come back in, as something is clearly passing in front between the camera and not allowing, the laser lights to be, picked up by the camera.
Wow.
So, yeah. And earlier, that was the area that he had heard the knocking. So at this point, we were running equipment for, basically starting at, 2 p.m. until some pieces of equipment until, 8 a.m. in the morning. So we have a tremendous amount of stuff that has to be reviewed at this point. So
wow. Sharon had a question. She says, is there any indication of who the man is around the little girl?
Well, actually, we had a psychic there this weekend who had never been there before, and he felt that this person was a overseer from when the land had been a plantation, and generally not a very nice person and pretty, you know, angry, hostile type entity. What's interesting is that would be about the seventh or eighth psychic that's gone up, identified this room, one room out of 87 in this large, you know, 48,000 square foot facility, and picked this room as having a hostile male presence in it.
Wow. Which,
you know, and again, you know, that's not something, if you go and look on the net, you need to do a web search, you won't find anything about that room in Jordan Springs or anything about a hostile male spirit or anything. Yet, we bring in these psychics and we don't give them any back history, and every one of them picks this room and says, you know, there's a nasty male in here, you know. And, you know, that's my total sense that it's a nasty male in there. And he's the one that when he comes up into the attic area, there's actually another child that's up there sometimes. It's a young boy. The kids are like just immediately, you know, one moment they're there and then they're gone. And then you get this sense of all, you know, when the kids are up there, it's interesting because, you know, you'll get touched. It's very playful. There's like a lightness in the air, and people like pick up on it. They almost get kind of giddy. And then all of a sudden this other spirit comes up there, and people are like, just start like, oh, I don't like it up there anymore. I'm, you know, this doesn't feel good. And so it's like, you know, it's like, why is everyone coming to that conclusion? And again, you know, it's like, we're not prepping them. You know, we're not telling them in advance there's something nasty there and, you know, and how they should feel or anything. This is just like people go up there and, you know, at this point we're talking hundreds of people have the same experience.
Wow.
So.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you something else that I noticed that I don't know if you talked too much about, but you guys were getting all kinds of audio, or not, I wouldn't say audio, just sounds happening in the ballroom.
Oh, I know.
And it was just amazing. And then there was something else you were talking about that later on you'd settle down in the downstairs area and was just listening, and you guys could actually hear full-blown conversations going on upstairs when there was nobody upstairs.
Okay. At between 3 o'clock and 5:30, I was sitting in this, like, essentially an easy chair that's in the lobby of Jordan Springs. Now, Jordan Springs stairwell, it's not like a circular stairwell, but it's like a stairwell that is open. So if you're there at the lobby looking up, you can see all the landings all the way up to the third floor, okay? And all the wings connect with that staircase, okay? So sound travels. Well, at, you know, by 3:30 in the morning, part of my team was actually asleep down in the pub, and the Adventure Myths team was in various locations asleep, and the rest of my team was actually out on the grounds investigating. So I'm the only one awake in the building. And I could hear, it started out, the first conversation that I heard was two women talking on the second floor. I mean, it was an animated conversation. Yet, the only two women in the building were two floors apart and asleep. And one of them was in the room adjoining me, and I know that she wasn't having a conversation. Later on, I heard men talking. And again, you know, I was the only male that was awake. And it wasn't just a voice. It was voices having a conversation.
Could you actually hear what they were talking about, or was it just...
No, I couldn't make it out. But you could identify, like, two men talking. I mean, you know, that's just what it was. Now, later, when we were getting ready to, you know, sleep for a couple hours, there were three of us from our group, and we were just getting ready to split up to go to our various locations where we were going to sleep, and all of a sudden, we all heard people talking upstairs. It sounded like there were a group of people talking, like men and stuff like that. And, you know, it's just, it was bizarre because the bottom line was there was nobody, or a live buddy or a human buddy, upstairs having some kind of group conversation at this point in time.
Sharon's asking a question. Are the owners open to having any of that resolved?
Well, I guess, you know, the issue is there an issue of having spirits there at all? You know what I mean? You know, again, in the past when we've had communication with spirits that have asked for help, you know, we'll talk about the light and, you know, moving on and stuff like that. You know, generally speaking, you know, to be honest, I'm not sure what's going on at Jordan Springs. Jordan Springs is probably one of the most haunted active locations in the United States. It just hasn't been, you know, it just hasn't hit that radar where it's well known yet. You know, my team's investigated at Waverly before, and Waverly's off the chart, and, you know, they kind of got the number one rep in the United States. But, you know, I think that Jordan Springs is real close, if not pretty much on par with them, just in terms of the level of activity and, you know, the things that occur regularly. You know, it's just, it's an amazing place. And one of the things about that is, you know, there's a level of visual stuff that occurs. People see shadow people all the time. People see apparitions. I saw something walk in the hall that night. But typically, where Jordan Springs is off the chart is the, like, disembodied voices and the EVPs and unexplained things. Like, I've been in Jordan Springs before with just one other person on a Sunday morning, and we heard organ music playing. So we searched the building looking for, thinking that, like, someone's got, like, a radio or some kind of, you know, music player that's on, like, you know, some kind of timer, and it went off. Search the whole building, can't find anybody else, can't find any music source. Now, at one point in time, Jordan Springs was a monastery, and part of the building had a chapel, and in the chapel there was an organ. So, you know, what does all mean? How? No idea, but I'm telling you straight up, there was organ music being played in that building, and we couldn't find a source for it.
Wow.
People hear music sometimes down in the pub area. And, you know, not after they've had a couple of drinks or indulged in those kind of spirits. What people hear down there, they identify as, like, waltz music.
Huh.
You know? And, you know, at one point, you know, Jordan Springs was, like, one of those hotsy-potsy grand hotels of the turn of the last century. You know, all the big shots, including one of the presidents of the United States, and at the moment I can't think of his name, but actually stayed up at Jordan Springs because of the mineral springs and the fact that, you know, it's just a couple hours out of Washington and kind of a nice escape from this, you know, the summer heat and humidity that, you know, would be in Washington pre-air conditioning times.
Right. Huh. So, I mean, it's almost like you got a temporal overlap. It's not so much ghosts as much as, like, you actually step back in time either audibly or visibly.
You know, to be honest, Mike, I have no idea what's going on there. I'd like to be, like, really definitive about it. And I'm not, you know, trying to compute or something.
I'm not trying to put a label on it, but, I mean, what you're describing, it goes past an intelligent haunting.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the other thing is, there's, like, a core group of spirits that over the last 2 years, we continually get them on audio. And we're aware of a specific presence. You know, there's just, like, you know when the child's there or you know when the man's there or something like that. But also, every time we seem to go there, there's also new characters. You know, and quite a few of the psychics that have come to that location over the years, they identify, you know, Jordan Springs as a portal. And, you know, I always ask them because, you know, people throw around a lot of terms in our field, and a lot of times you think you understand what they're talking about. but you don't, or they're misusing a word, or they're using it in a different way. But when it all comes down to it, they're all pretty much saying that Jordan Springs, for whatever reason, seems to be some doorway. You know, doorway to what? I don't know. Another dimension, possibly. But it seems to be an area where this spirit-type activity can easily happen. Now, you know, Jordan Springs is an interesting building in terms of its construction, too. Part of the building's made of cut stone, okay? The rest of the building's made out of bricks that were actually made on site. And then next to the building, you know, you've got springs, you've got running water, and you've got this geological formation that can, the only one in North America happens to be there. So, if you buy into the whole thing about, you know, various types of minerals and crystals having effects in terms of being, you know, capacitors in terms of energy or sound, I mean, there's a lot going on there, you know, from that aspect.
Interesting. It'd be really interesting to set up some geological equipment in that location just to see, you know, what kind of magnetic fields are going on and things like that. But,
well, the other thing about this particular place is just the level of documented history here. You know, the original white settlers were in the 1700s, but predating them, this was a holy place for the Catawba Indians. And they used to come all the way from South Carolina up to, you know, basically the top of Virginia to come to that particular location and conduct their ceremonies. And literally, you know, for hundreds of years they were doing that. And then after that, you know, we the place was a plantation. And then, you know, there's all the Civil War history that's associated with the location. And then, you know, the place was a monastery, and then the place was a drug rehab facility. So there's so many layers to this place. I mean, and it was a hotel. You know, it's an incredibly historically complex location, you know. And, you know, when you're on the grounds, I mean, we found what we believe are a couple more grave sites during our investigating of the grounds. Now, supposedly, at the end of the Civil War, they dug up all the soldiers that had been buried there because, you see, Jordan Springs had been a hospital for both the Union and the Southern Army during all the various battles of Winchester. Now, Winchester actually, at that point in time, was basically the largest, richest city in the South. And everyone was fighting for control of it and essentially destroyed it. It never recovered. But Winchester changed hands close to 70 times. So this particular location, you know, 35 times it was a Union hospital and 35 times it was a Southern hospital kind of thing going on. So you know that, like, records weren't going to be kept well. And, you know, just the whole concept of, you know, I'm sure there's all kinds of buried soldiers that never got, you know, returned to where they need to be. So, again, just, you know, it's a real special place. You know, well, it's really one of a kind.
Well, here's an interesting question for you that I was just thinking. When you guys have interactions from these ghosts, do they seem to be from the same time period?
No, not at all. Now, certain sections of the building seem to have certain time periods. Now, the section of the building, the oldest section of the building, is the pub area and carriage house. Now, the pub area was where I was used as a surgery during the time it was a hospital. The carriage house area was a section where they basically, you know, was like for recovery. Now, psychics and stuff come in, and we have recordings of what we believe are male soldiers talking in the pub. And we have in the carriage house area, we tend to get women, female EVPs, and psychics have all identified these as women who were nurses/helpers in terms of nursing these wounded soldiers. So.
And you said you've actually, did you not say there was Indian spirits on the grounds that you've...
Yeah, absolutely. There's a section of the grounds where there's one of the springs. And at one point, given that the springs were an important part of the ceremonies for the Catawba Indians, we're pretty sure that that would obviously be one of the, like, sacred places or worship places, you know, however you want to define it. Now, at some point, when it was a monastery, in this grotto where the spring is, they've put a statue of Mary in there. And the thing is when you're in this grotto, when you look at it, it looks like it should feel like a real peaceful place. But when you go into it, it feels everything but peaceful. It's a very uncomfortable place. And I think there's some, like, kind of, you know, cosmic disharmony that's going on in there. But anyway, there's no electricity near that area. You can set an EMF meter at the base of the statue, and there's times when it just, you know, it just goes crazy. And we actually have a recording where we had a guest investigator who's part Native American and was asking in Catawban, essentially, are you of the first people? That's how they referred to themselves. And he got an EVP reply back in Catawban saying, first people.
Huh.
So, you know, pretty amazing EVP.
Well, yeah, considering, you know, a lot of the EVPs I've ever heard were usually in English. You never hear any other language, per se, it seems like, on all the examples I've ever heard. And this actually responded in Indian, and in the language?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, well, you know, it kind of makes sense. You know, it just seems like, you know, up on the third floor of Jordan Springs. Now, the third floor is, well, it was the dormitory for the drug rehab facility. The spirits up in that part of the building on the third floor, they're very contemporary in their speech. And that's the other thing. The EVPs that we get down, like, in the pub area and stuff like that, sounds like old Southern speech. You know, you kind of get that kind of mush mouth, kind of, you know, just
well, Southern dialect,
old style, yeah. And up there on the third floor, it's very contemporary. The language that they use is pretty rude and crude. I've probably been told to F myself 100 times in the last couple of years up on the third floor. And we've got, I can't.
Well, you've got a fan base on the third floor.
Yeah, and it totally amuses my team to no end. But yeah, we have dozens of EVPs where there's things on the third floor telling you to F yourself. So
that's interesting.
Really, yeah, Joel was just pointing out that the Catawba response was captured on multiple recorders. And that's
wow.
The other thing is we have, you know, we have this one EVP where there's this hostile male spirit on the third floor that had been just kind of messing with us the whole night, and we were kind of started pushing back, so to speak, and we were actually following him down this hall, and one of the investigators says, I've got you on the run, and it says, F you, I'm not following you. And we got that on four recorders.
Huh.
So,
that's significant, big time significant. I mean, you know, one is one thing. You get four recorders recording the same exact thing, it's kind of hard to say it's anything but what it is. You know? You know, that's the same as everybody seeing that ball of light, you know, a ball of energy, you know. What's the chances of one person seeing it, much less two, and then them both describing the same size simultaneously?
Right.
That's just amazing.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The spirits that tend to be up on the third floor, I think, have, like, kind of the most issues. And I think, you know, Joel's in the chat room, and he can kind of tell you that, too. It's like, in a lot of ways, I think it bothers them that, you know, myself and Joel are able to sense them. Because Well, I tend to take the brunt of it. I mean, Joel also gets tagged from time to time in terms of, you know, not being overly welcomed by the folks up on the third floor. But in other sections of Jordan Springs, though, it's totally different. You know, it feels very pleasant and it's welcoming. A lot of the soldiers that are like spirits that are out on the grounds, you know, when they approach you, it's not threatening, it's not creepy, it's just different, you know.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. I mean, it's almost like they're hospitable to some extent.
Well, yeah. It's just,
I mean, like the little girl, for instance, wants to play all the time. You know,
yeah.
It's like you're literally walking into, well, they're human, but that's the whole point here. You know, these are people, and you're like walking into their house, and they're being hospitable, in essence, except for that one gentleman up, you know, on third floor.
Now, one other history. I just realized that we got another one of the Shenandoah Shadow folks, and current Nexus member. Tim's in the chat room tonight. Now, Tim actually got a real funny EVP that's actually going to end up being in the documentary. Recently, we just found out that Jordan Springs, in one of its incarnations, was a brothel. Now, I can't imagine why the current owners don't really promote that aspect of it, but they don't. Anyway, so we recently found that out, and it just kind of amuses me. One way, Tim's up on the third floor. And you can hear this recording, and he's going, can you say hello or something to that effect? And there's this response, this low response. It sounds like Mae West or some hoochie-coochie kind of lady going, hello, just like that back to him. It's absolutely hysterical. So,
evidently,
not the first time I've been somewhere with Tim and a paranormal harlot has been attracted to him. So I don't know what's going on with Tim, but it is a source of amusement. Tim also got another EVP one night when we were up on the third floor. That's really amusing. Tim and I were the only two guys in the building, and you can hear us leaving this room, and you can hear the door shut. Okay, as we're doing that, you hear this woman's voice say, bunch of idiots, as we're leaving. And then you hear a male voice reply to her. So, you know, Tim insists that it says a bunch of idiots, but I think it's saying Tim's an idiot, but that's just because I'm, you know, a little bit selective in my hearing, but it's clearly either actually it's saying a bunch of idiots, but it's just amusing, just, you know, the kind of things that we're getting there.
It's like they're observing you guys, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's totally intelligent, totally interactive.
Well, I think the girl's the most interactive one you guys have dealt with, isn't it?
She's probably the most verbal. And we tend to actually get her, we've got a number of recordings of her as a disembodied voice as opposed to an EVP. We hear her in real time. We acknowledge it, so when you listen to the recording, you'll hear us acknowledge that we heard it as it happened. And, you know, that makes it pretty different. And then, we have a lot of EVPs of her as well. And, again, she tends to, respond to you when you talk to her about playing hide and seek and playing games, and she's particularly responsive to women and older girls, kind of mid-teens. She seems to be very attracted to mid-teens. So it's just interesting place, you know. I can't wait to see what kind of evidence, particularly since Adventure Mist, was using some different techniques and different equipment than we have. One of the things that we were doing Tim was doing on Saturday, is he was shooting daytime full-spectrum video, and I believe he had some type of UV filter on the camera and seeing if he could catch anything on the grounds during daylight using that type of equipment. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, once he has an opportunity to review that.
Wonderful, man. I can't wait to see what you guys did capture. As much stuff as was happening during the broadcast towards the end, I mean, and you said it actually got, there was more intense after that. So it'd be really great.
Yeah. Doug's asking what kind of camera they were using during the broadcast, and to be honest, I'm not sure.
Doug, at one point I got a good chance to see it, and from what I could tell, it was it looked like one of the cameras that the newscasters are using nowadays. It's bigger than a standard VHS camera, but it's digital with a big lens on it, and they had FireWire running back to the laptop.
And it was a Mac laptop they were using.
Right. So, you know, it's pretty much the same standard that we were doing, as far as I can tell. Just different video camera. Are you there?
Yeah.
John?
Okay. One of the things I just want to mention, because we're just about out of time here, is that one of our teammates actually got injured. She had an injured foot and managed to, during the course of the night, hit a stone sill plate on a door, seriously stubbing her foot. And when she went to the doctor, they had it x-rayed. She actually has broken her foot, and tomorrow she has an appointment, I guess, with an orthopedic surgeon. So I want to wish Nicole, you know, good health and a speedy recovery.
Right, and this brings up another point that I actually said in the forums. No matter how careful you are, you have to be prepared for stuff. You know, I mean, we train, the way we've trained is to be very observant and try to be careful while you're on investigations. But this proves that no matter how careful you are, things do happen. So you just have to kind of watch yourself. And use common sense. So, let's see. Looks like Doug and Grant are going to be interviewing Dr. John Climo this Thursday. Channeling ETs in the afterlife. That ought to be a pretty interesting interview.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully next Sunday night we'll have Frank, the one of the team leaders of Adventure Myths. If we can get him on, I'd like him to be able to possibly talk with us for at least a little while next Sunday night, and hopefully they'll have had a chance to go over some of their evidence, and maybe he can lay something amazing on us.
Oh, man, yeah, no doubt. I'd like to hear what they've captured, too. Well, everybody, I guess we're coming down, winding down the show and everything. I hope everybody has a great work week coming up. And we will see you next Sunday. And again, join Doug and Grant on Thursday night with Paranexus Universe, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Join us Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern, and hopefully we'll get Frank in here. John, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Just thanks, everyone, for joining us tonight. You all have a good evening.
Take care, everybody.